Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where Dr. Janine Krause, that's me, gives you, a health junkie, a weekly dose of tools to help you increase your energy and resilience to life stressors.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of the Health Fix. On today's episode, I have Carla Sridevi Cohen. She is an award-winning embodied emotional intelligence healer, coach, and best-selling author. And she's been through quite a bit, and especially after pushing yourself to the limits, which if you've listened to any of my previous podcasts, you've probably heard me mention about running myself into the ground, not once, but twice. But Carla has a story where she was in bed for 2 years after pushing herself to the limits while working in the film industry. And her story is quite fascinating. I think it's just a great story to start off with, but let's just dive into saying hello to Carla. Carla, welcome to the Health Fix.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, your story is very similar to mine, where, you know, we're doing all the things in the career, we're trying to make a name for ourselves, we're trying to impress people, we're trying to climb that ladder. And then all of a sudden, it's like something takes over us. And now we can't get out of bed. Now we can't move. We're just kind of paralyzed in a way. Tell us a little bit about that process, because I think what a lot of women don't realize is like, yeah, things get bad. But in the process of getting things to that point, we often go, oh, it's fine. It's fine. It's just, I'm just working a lot. That's why I'm so tired. And then it's like, that's okay. That's why this is happening. And we keep kind of giving ourselves excuses, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yes. And I at that time in my life, I was pretty unconscious about my body and I really wasn't a listener to it. Now I teach people about listening to their body, but at the time, I was just driven. I was a woman in a man's world, and I didn't realize that the reason I wasn't getting a raise or getting the next promotion was really because the culture was very male oriented. So it didn't matter, but in my mind, my thought was, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not doing enough. I need to work harder. I need to put in more energy. You know, I need to be superwoman. So, you know, my job was development, which is the people who develop the stories. And then we turn around and sell it to either, you know, production, like a television studio or somebody like Disney, somebody like that.
Right? Sure.
And so what I was doing at the time was I was writing and I was developing other people's material and I was packaging talent into those things. Now, normally, those things are divided between different people.
Okay.
So I was doing, a job that really should have been taken up by at least three people. And the way that I got there was my boss, who brought me into the company, who was a wonderful man with a great sense of humor. He was acerbic, you know, he was a little bit of a dry wit. He knew how to make fun of Hollywood. That's why I loved him, you know. And but the owners of our company were very toxic people. There were drugs going on all the time in our environment. You know, different aromas wafting down the air, different things going on. And I don't think that they didn't realize that they weren't really thinking clearly. But anyway, they abruptly fired him and expected me to take over his job. So that was how I got my promotion. And so I ended up putting in a 70-hour work week. And my husband and I would go socialize. And I'd be like, oh, you, honey, you go talk to people. And I'd be like, you know, my head's in the script, you know, while everybody else is having a good time.
Man. Oh, yeah. Man. It's no life. But in the moment, we're like, I'm getting places. I'm doing things.
Yeah, you know, give me more, you know. So I loved what I did, you know. Don't get me wrong, you know. But there's a point where you just have to go, you know, this is just cray-cray, you know. So anyway, and I was using all kinds of stimulants to, you know, keep myself going, you know, some legal, some not legal at the time. And and it was very much in our culture, you know, at that time there was, and there still is anyway, a lot of drugs going on within the industry. You know, the drug of choice was cocaine at that time. And so actually in the office I'd been at before that, they used to have the valet would bring it in and put lines out in the morning so that everybody could have a sniff before they went off. It was like our, instead of a donut or a cup of coffee, it was have a line. Oh, so I was kind of living on those stimulants to keep going. And then, but one day, mine fell on the ground in the bathroom. And I had this moment where I looked down and I went, are you going to seriously thinking about getting down on your knees and sniffing that? Like, are you serious? Like, look at where you're at. You know, the part of me that was like much higher developed, right? And I just went, nah, that was it. So I quit cold turkey.
Wow.
Which was fine, no problem. It was really just a decision. And I kept going. I just kept going. And I just drank more and more coffee, more and more coffee. So, and that really, that there was a point where none of it was working anyway. So that's when I knew I was in trouble. Like I started part of my job. Like, again, I was reading. I had a sofa. It was very nice, luxurious. I would lay back on the sofa. I had my fountain trickling in the background. You could hear the birds outside. And I would just drift off. I'd be reading a script and I start drifting off. And my little cat naps turned into 20, 30, an hour was gone, you know.
Getting longer.
Yeah, exactly. And then finally I went, you know, this is really bad. Like, I think what and then there was something with a problem at the office where they're like, well, you know, they kind of complained a little bit because somebody in the staff had seen me reading and sleeping while I was supposed to be reading. And I said, well, you know, I'm doing my best right now. And I think they were going to fire me anyway. But I just realized I can't do this anymore. And I quit. And when I went to the doctors, they were blown away because I had a white blood cell count that was off the charts, you know, which means your body's fighting some, for those who don't know, my body was trying to fight some kind of infection. And I had a constant fever, and I had been functioning all this time, I don't know how long, with the fever going on. So when they started to test me, they were like, okay, we're going to test this liquid, that orifice, you know, okay, everything you can imagine. And they kept coming up with, we don't actually know what the problem is. Like, they threw out some theories. It was the beginning of people talking about chronic fatigue syndrome, but that's sort of a basket term for we don't know, and we'll put it there, right?
Right, right.
So the doctor said, look, you know, I'm really sorry. You could tell you was such a good man. And he's like, I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to do to help you. So, you know, why don't you go home and, you know, I think you might be depressed. Why don't you take these antidepressants? And I went, and just go home and sleep. And, you know, it'll go away. And I was like, wow, I was not depressed until you told me about taking antidepressants. You know, because I'm a pretty positive person. I went from this really super high, happy, I'm going to fix this, to shit, you know. The doctors can't fix me. For the first time in my life, the doctors can't fix me. And my mom knew what was going on. And my mom couldn't fix me. And she was a pretty good nurse. She'd actually been a nurse during World War II.
Wow.
So I'm like, this was my come to Jesus moment, where I just went, my idea of what reality was suddenly had just collapsed in on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, and that's very, very common. The whole, like, here's an antidepressant and go sleep it off. And then it's like, oh gosh, what do I do? And the concept of a lot of us, you know, anyone I think who was born, I would say from earlier than 1970, like 80s, whatever, there's this concept of we go to the doctor fixes us. There wasn't really this concept of, oh, I can fix myself. I can help myself. There's things to do. I didn't have any clue of this. And I even went to naturopathic medicine school and we talked about these things, but it didn't really click in my head that there was really that, you know, me, I'm a naturopath, right? I thought I was there to fix people too for a long time until this happened to me. And I was like, oh, it's inside people. It's not me to fix people. It's not the doctor's job. So obviously you went from that. And you went home and you were like, okay, I've got to do something for myself here.
Well, I wasn't quite there yet. I'll tell you when I kind of was there, but the real bottom of the pit was I went home and I was dutifully like, okay, you know, the doc, I'm going to take the antidepressant, you know, even though I felt like I'm not depressed. So I took the antidepressant. I my body, I just went into the bath. I remember I was going to fix my hair. In those days, I used to straighten it. You can see now this is more natural. This is what it really looks like, all curly. So I went into the bathroom, and I was going to straighten my hair, and I went to put my arms up over my head, and I collapsed. I didn't even have the strength to lift my arms. And that's when I remember sitting on the toilet and just weeping, you know, like, this is so bad. You know, nobody's ever going to be able to fix me. This is, oh my God, this is serious, you know. And in that moment, you know, I'm famous for my decision. So I made a decision, you know, like, I'm going to find a way to get her. I'm going to find a way to fix this. I don't know what it's going to be. And we tried everything. We went to, you know, naturopaths. I did acupuncture. I did, you know, I had shots injected of me of all different kinds of things. Some people thought it was Lyme disease. You know, they couldn't find any positive evidence of that. So anyway, so I did all of those things that people normally try to do, you know, when they're still looking for somebody outside to kind of fix it for them. Mm-hmm. And that's an important point that you and I both really share. And then what the turnaround for me was, I read a bunch of books when I was, you know, in between sleeping under the elm tree during the day and having my mom there take care of me because I really couldn't do anything. And that's another important point. I went from the woman who supported our marriage for the first 12 years. I didn't care whether my husband worked or not because my money was really good, to this person who was completely dependent on everybody. And for me, that was very difficult from a pride standpoint, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we get into this tenderness of like, wow, you know, what did I do wrong? So that was the next thing is, what did I do? You know, that was sort of blaming myself for, you know, what did I do? And so there was that going on very in the background, what did I do? But there was, you know, blaming myself, but there was also this part of me just like, okay, just be open. And so what started to turn me around actually was a friend invited me, well, I invited myself with my friend to a transcendental meditation lecture. And, you know, when I went to go experience the introduction, and the guy was chanting the names of the lineage and the gurus and something in Sanskrit. And it was weird because I went through this whole thing like, wow, I know this. I couldn't recite it, but it was like some part of me woke up that was really old and just remembered something, you know what I mean? So I started in earnest, you know, I wanted to learn and I didn't have the money because I'd been unemployed for so long. And he looked at me and he's like, he asked me every which way how I could afford it. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're talking to like, I'm at the bottom. We were barely making our house payment. And he went, you know what? I feel very strongly that I'm supposed to teach you. So I'm gonna teach you and then you can send me the money when you have it. I said, okay, done. So I started meditating. I haven't stopped. That was 30 years ago. I don't know exactly how long it's been. At least 30 years of constant meditation every day since that day. Because the meditation and starting to go inward was the very thing that was the catalyst that started to open me up.
Yeah.
And so from there, I ended up, there were a lot of things that happened. So the meditators came to my house. They needed a place to meditate. I offered our home. And when they stepped, there was this old woman. She was white haired and brilliant blue eyes and kind of a little hunched over. And she stepped over my threshold and she looked me in the eye and she went, this is the home of a very powerful healer.
Huh.
And I looked behind me, you know, are you talking to me? I didn't know what she meant. And I really didn't know how to process that. So I just smiled and welcomed them into my home, right? And within 4 or 5 days of that, there was a psychic fair going on nearby. And I thought, you know, I felt good enough to go to the fair. So I went, I thought I'll just go for a little bit. And there was a woman who did a tarot reading on me, and she started reading the cards, and she said, oh my God, you've been really sick, and, you know, what would help you is energy balancing. I'm like, what's that, you know? And she said, well, I can't explain it. I said, how much is it? She goes, $50. I'm like, oh God, here we go. So I can't do that, you know? I can't. So I went home, whatever. Later that night, I got a check for $50.
Wow.
I went... Hello. So I think, do you think, you know, maybe the universe was trying to tell me something? So
a little hint there. Just a little one.
So anyway, I went to her and we started to do the first. She had a massage table set up. She had incense wafting through the air. It was very tranquil, and candles were lit, and you know, and there were crystals everywhere. And I was like, okay, you know. And she goes, just lay down on the table. I'm like, okay. So I lay down on the table. She starts to put her hands on me, and she jumps back, and she goes, get off my table. And I'm like, oh my God, now what did I do? You know, and it kind of freaked me out. And she says, look, you know, you're a very gifted psychic and healer. And part of the problem is you don't know how to manage your own energy and power. Hmm. And so some of this issue you've been dealing with is you've been just like a sponge, you know, for what's going on around you. And so the way we're going to fix that is you're going to work on me. I never let anybody work on me, but you're going to work on me, and you'll be my apprentice, and you'll keep paying me.
Oh,
sure.
free care for you. Okay.
So I started working on her, and then pretty soon she was asking me to read her patients that were not in the room. You know, people I didn't even know that she would tell me their name. That was it. And I was supposed to dial into them because she wanted to prove to me and also test what I could do. So kind of kick the tires. So I was giving her, I would see things on people and I would tell her what I picked up and she would validate it. And sometimes what was difficult for me at that time was, again, not being in contact very much with myself emotionally, physically, having to say some of the very personal things that I was coming across on people would freak me out. I mean, I just would break down in tears and start to cry and felt like I was doing something wrong. There was just all this, you know, stuff that came up. I remember very vividly, she's, you know, one person in particular where there was, I said, he's ashamed of his penis. And she went, yes, that's true. He was molested. I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I just, but when I went, had to tell her that, I just, it was almost like I couldn't, it just felt like, you know, and so, it was wonderful in a way because it opened my heart up because in Hollywood, I was so driven and so focused on this that all of a sudden here was this world of people that really needed help that I could somehow help in my weird little way. So anyway, from there I went on and I started studying more and more, and I got into all kinds of different modalities. I became an essential oils expert. I studied with a Native American Indian who took me in my first sweat lodge. I remember coming out of the tent and collapsing with my face down in the dirt from the heat not being able to get up. And he very unceremoniously threw a bucket of cold water on me to get me up.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, and then from there, I kind of morphed into, you know, I have over 20 different certifications, but I really, where I went is for a while I was reading for people and I was doing all this other stuff. And then I realized what the real thing was, is I needed to be able to help them to help themselves. That the real thing wasn't about me reading them. It wasn't really about me even, you know, trying to fix it. Although I still, you know, I still work on healing people. I still lay my hands on people and I do healing over Zoom. But it was really about empowering them. Like, how could I help them start to tune into themselves so that they could fix themselves of most things without having to be dependent on somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. Cause I think a lot of people, like I had mentioned before, will come in and be like, okay, you know, I'm going to this person for them to fix me. I mean, as an acupuncturist, I don't know how many times I've had people come in and be like, all right, doc, put those needles in and fix me. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm giving your body the tools here to figure it out. I'm just the guide. You're doing all the magic behind the scenes. So when you work with someone now, how does a typical session look? What do you guys do?
Well, depending, so I have different ways that I work, but the most common thing now, there's two things that are the most common. One of them is people who are taking, they'll be with me for months, like over a period of months. And basically, it's, you know, it's like a combination of coaching and healing. I hate to use the word coaching because people have this thing that goes off in their mind, but it's really about like what's going on with you this week. What do you, where are you stuck? Because what happens is when you start to help, what I found with my experience, and I've seen this over and over again with my thousands of people that I've worked with, is those things that we don't register, that we don't process, the emotional stuff, that we don't think is any big deal, that turns it over 20, 30 years, that turns into the big deals in the body, right? So what I do is week by week, you know, helping them move through that, helping them, giving them the tools to start to tune in, you know, giving them the third, because you can do this on your own, right? You can, but it's really hard. It's really hard to climb Mount Kailash, which I did, by the way, without a Sherpa guiding you up the mountain, right? Because the Sherpa is going to say, you need to rest here. Don't drink water here. You'll get sick from the altitude here. You know what I mean? So what I do is I work with people in a very comprehensive fashion. I'm looking sometimes at what's going on emotionally that's toxic to them. What's going on environmentally? People are being not just their emotional environment, but that's a huge part of it, but physically, in terms of what are you piping into your house? Are you using, for example, plug-in air fresheners that are very toxic for your body? You know, and we literally, depending on the person, we might get into all of those different pieces. Nutrition. I'm not a nutritionist. I just want to say I've self-studied. You know what I mean? And I'm not here to whatever. But there are basic things that are just we all know. Like, okay, let's talk about sugar. You know what I mean? Let's talk about how processed food impacts your emotional state, because we have over 62 chemicals in the body. Everything we eat, drink, smell, think, inhale, touch creates a chemical cascade in the body, which could create a change in the tissue, which can create a long-term health problem. So it's kind of comprehensive.
Absolutely. It sounds cool. I mean, there's multiple different things involved. I mean, I didn't get into becoming a naturopath and acupuncturist and doing all the oils and all that stuff either, you know, it's just more tools, right? The more right. tools you have in your box to kind of guide people through, you know, the better it is. Now, okay, you climbed a mountain and I don't know where it is. And I wonder if other folks do. Where's this mountain?
So Mount Kailash is on the border of northern India and Tibet. And it's a very, very sacred mountain that it was a real interesting, there's a story about that in my book, the one Modern Women in the Business World, because that first chapter of that book is that story. But I basically climbed a mountain. It took 17 hours to climb this mountain in high altitude in northern India. And I did it because there was a holy man at the top of the mountain that I wanted to meet. And that climb almost killed me, you know? And that's a story for another time, but it was 17 hours up shale, you know? So you climb and then you climb and you get forward 3 feet, then you slide back 6 feet, you know what I mean? And it was that kind of a thing, but yeah.
You know, climbing most mountains, I mean, there's a lot of maybe metaphor for life in that, where you climb forward and then you're back, and then you climb forward and you're back. And especially when you're working on emotional intelligence and you're working on yourself and getting through some of these hurdles, like you were mentioning, a lot of us have stuff that we have stuck from childhood, from parents, from, you know, whatever it may be that we were exposed to, ingrained in our brain, and now it's hardwired.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the emotional intelligence and in particular, the embodied emotional intelligence aspect of things, because I think a lot of people are like, okay, emotional intelligence, I get it. I can sense and tap into myself, but embodied, how do I pull that in?
Right. So the difference between emotional intelligence that most people understand, that's the ability to identify, manage, and also your emotions, but also identify the emotions of others and understand how to sort of waltz with those emotions, right? In a constructive way. So the different, and usually that's an intellectual concept for people. So the difference between that and embodied is we literally are going in and we're going, okay, so what does that feel like in your body in this moment? Like, what is that? What is, what is the composition of when you say you feel afraid or you feel angry or you're nervous or you're procrastinating? There's a chemistry, there's a physiology that goes along with that. So under, can you, if you can relate to that, like I literally, I can't identify every single nerve in my body and what it's doing, but I can do a lot of them. You know what I mean? I can tell you, you know, when I walk in onto a, like for example, this, when I walked into the property that we're renting this house right now, right? And I walked onto the lawn and I felt there was a physiological change in my body that let me know this was where I was supposed to be moving into, right? Hmm. So when you get to that point where you can start to identify on that level, or you walk into a room and you go, okay, I'm having a response that's not a good one necessarily to that person over there. Why am, first of all, where is that and why? You know what I mean? So because what happens is, you know, we all are automatically attracted to and repelled by certain people. And a lot of that has to do with perceptual decisions that we've made into laws in our brain that aren't really based on the truth, if you get what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, based on, I mean, a lot of the things we do are based on just primal responses. Maybe right. Something reminds us of someone. Maybe right. Something they're wearing reminds us of something. It's very like trigger-based.
Exactly.
Primal trigger-based.
Yeah, and it could be a smell that they're emitting. You know what I mean? That smell is a very, it has a negative connotation for me, you know? So it can be that on that level. So embodied emotional intelligence is really understanding what's going on in the body moment by moment and utilizing that, because this knows how to lie. This doesn't know how to lie. The body doesn't know how to lie. And so my work is based on that premise.
Ah, and so if we looked at it back to the terms of chronic fatigue or someone being fatigued, obviously the brain can be like, I could keep going, I can keep going. The body's like, no, you can't. I'm going to halt this. And right. And yes, we can get in the cellular aspect of it, but really halting of the body in terms of things is a message in and of itself.
Correct. Not- Correct. Yeah. And had I known then, of course, you know, it's I'm so much wiser now, and I'm sure you are too, Janine. You know, just, I mean, it's crazy. So there were plenty of signs, you know, what happened, just like with every illness that anybody has, you know, I like to say to people, look, you know, let's do it before you can even hear the train whistling down the track. But most people wait till the train is already ready to collide into them before they decide to do something. You know, I have a couple local clients. One guy in particular I'm thinking about, love him. But he comes in frequently. His issue is that I was actually able to help him with chronic back pain that he's been suffering from for years. It's gone now. But there's other things that are going on in his body that the pain was a signal to try to get him to pay attention to something. And he's done better in that area, but he's not at this point. He has not been willing to look at how that's affecting other things and what the train is trying to tell him before it hits him. You know what I mean? And so, you know, like the old saying, we can lead a horse to water, but we can't make him drink. It's like helping people as much as they're willing. I will meet people wherever they're at. But the thing is we have the possibility, the capability, I believe, within us to heal just about anything. Mm-hmm. And it a lot of it is mindset. But when I say mindset, you know, mindset is kind of like a big word, right? It's not really that. It's kind of having understanding how to listen to the body. It's not just a container for carrying around your organs. It's a communication device. It broadcasts and it receives. So what's it receiving, and how can you interpret that, and how can you utilize that to shift, you know, pretty much anything, whether it's your manifesting relationships better, increasing your income, because all of these things are vibrationally based. So when we change our emotions, we change our chemical makeup, we change our frequency, which changes our vibration, which changes what we attract.
And then we get into the whole law of attraction and things of that nature. But I think, you know, where a lot of people are on this, because it took me, God, I'd say probably a good course of like 5 years to really understand that I was an empath. I felt everything, and a lot of what I was feeling wasn't even mine, and then right. how to sort that through. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details of all that on this, but more so for folks who are listening and they're like, okay, so how do I even do this? Is it body scanning? Is it, you know, how do I even begin to turn inward and go, okay, say I've got some pain. And every time I do a certain thing, I get this particular pain. Mm. How would someone start with that? Would it be a meditation process where we start and look at going inward and what's happening?
So, yeah, I mean, it's not a meditation, because meditation a lot of times means, unfortunately, yes, I mean, I love meditation, don't get me wrong, but people don't necessarily stay in their body when yeah. they meditate. They tend to leave, right? So this is about learning how to, you know, really put your mind and your attention into that space where the issue is, and being willing to ride the tunnel all the way through till you get out to the other side. And I find, and this, you know, I don't mean this to be like a, you know, whatever, but I again, going back to the analogy of me guiding somebody is much easier than somebody trying to do this from me saying this over a, you know, in a program. It's as simple as tuning in, but what happens is, what I find is, when people try to do it on their own, a lot of times they leave before the music has finished. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what has to happen is they need to drop in enough to be completely present with that sensation and be willing to be there through the entirety of it, and then test it to see if it's really gone when you think you finished it. Because what happens is this lies, right? So, or, you know, another thing people can do is, you know, simple, if you're familiar, I'm sure you are, but maybe, I don't know about all your audience that's listening, is familiar with kinesiology. There's muscle testing you can do to see if you've released something or you still have more to do. But even that, you could still kind of,
I feel like you could fudge that a little.
Yeah, you could fudge it. So I think, you know, the best thing is, it's like, you know, going back to the analogy of the guide, it's hard to do, you know, I had two bicycle accidents over a couple year period, right? And as good as I am at healing, I couldn't get everything, every part of that myself. Mm-hmm. I needed somebody else outside me to help me with it, because it's like, I can't do surgery on myself, you know? So that's part of it. On just a very basic level, you know, certainly journaling is very helpful. Starting to track, like, what am I feeling today? What's going on? And also, like, what's happening when I eat certain foods? You know, how did my mood just change? I don't understand. I was feeling really happy. I had those potatoes, and now I feel like I'm a little depressed, but I don't associate it with the potatoes unless I journal it, you know, that I know, gosh, every time I ate potato, I love potatoes, but I'm just saying, I'm not trying to pick on potatoes, but just say that, you know, for somebody who eats gluten, right, every time they eat gluten, you know, that people who are gluten sensitive, right, there's certain emotional changes that take place with the glutens, right? I've completely eliminated glutens out of my, you know, my diet. For that reason. So journaling, keeping it not just on what you're feeling when you get up, but what's going on throughout the day, maybe tracking what you're eating. I'm not trying to overcomplicate it, but these are things you can do that are beginning steps.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not ready to have a guide, you know, and you want to just do some things, that's a good start.
I think that's perfect. That's perfect. That's some of the ones I love as well, especially the food, because I know for a lot of folks, like you're saying, like, oh, I eat, you know, potatoes or whatever it may be. I mean, I've had this happen to myself. There's certain foods I eat and I get angry. It's so weird. And I'm just like zero to like B word in like 2 seconds. And I'm like, wow, like, okay, that food and I do not like each other. And then I'm going to go on full, you know, claws out mode. So, you know, these things, for those of you who are listening, you might think, okay, this is really strange. And I'm here to tell you it's a real thing, and paying more attention, you'll notice how certain things make you feel, smells, environments, and looking at triggers. I'm guessing that, Carla, you do a lot of recommendation to watch triggers. What triggers you? What gets you set off?
Yeah, or and more, yeah, that, or if you're, you know, sometimes it's not, it's more like, why aren't you doing that? Do you know what I mean? Like, for me, one of the things that I guide myself through, you know, I do all the techniques on myself. I practice what I preach is what I'm trying to say. So, for example, you know, I have this assignment I gave to myself about something I needed to complete for my business. And what's interesting is for 3 weeks, I would not sit down and do it. Now, it's a writing assignment, and I like to write, but for whatever reason, I could not get myself to move into doing it. Now, it can be that that was out of flow for me right now. You know, maybe it's just not the right time. But why not investigate whether there's something else deeper going on that's causing me to procrastinate on this particular issue? So when I decided to do my own process on myself, what I found was I did have some baggage sitting there in my body that was, you know, holding me back. And I made peace with that. But what happened was very funny. Still didn't write that, but I ended up writing an article for a magazine that I owe an article to. So I was like, okay, you know, something unblocked here. And the thing is if you can unwind one thing that's like a thought that you recirculate over and over again, because we have 85,000 thoughts, I think it is a day. We make 30,000 decisions in a day. So we're 30,000 times we're deciding whether we want to avoid pain or and go towards more pleasure. That's essentially what we're doing all day long, right? So if you have something that's stopping you from moving forward, that's a good place to start. Like, why won't you? You know, when people do, here, we're coming towards the end of the year, New Year's resolutions. How many people, they're so resolved, you know, at January 1 to do something. And then by 2 weeks, usually it's three weeks later, right? Nothing. Yeah. So what's causing that, right? There's a disconnect between what's going on in the mind and what's happening in the emotional part of us in the body. So now it's like, okay, I need to get acquainted with the part of me that's choosing not to move forward and really be curious about, and that's another thing is being curious, right? That's a very important piece. Why, and rather than judging, because we all go into judgment, forget judgment. That doesn't serve you. What serves you is curiosity. So every time you want to judge yourself, and that's for everybody, if you want to judge yourself, have, you know, and then stop judging yourself for judging yourself, you know what I mean? And then try to, if you catch yourself judging yourself, go into curiosity and go, isn't that interesting? Why is that happening? So if you can get curious, then you can start to also shift things. Because like, okay, well, that's interesting. Why am I not moving forward? Why don't I really want to move? I thought I wanted to lose weight January 1st, right? Why am I not losing? Why am I not doing that? Why am I not going to the gym? It's been 2 weeks now. I went to the gym every day for 2 weeks. Now I stopped going. What's that about?
I mean, I think that's huge. Asking yourself the questions. You know, so crucial to keep asking. And I know a lot of people will be like, well, I asked myself the questions and I didn't get any information. And it's like, okay, I've had to ask myself about like, let's go back to anger for a minute, because clearly I have anger issues. something happened in childhood to give me some anger issues, but you know, and no joking aside, that is for real. But I had to ask myself over and over and over again for months till I would get to the bottom of it. And I think this is where a guide is really helpful, because a lot of times you're like, oh my gosh, I just can't get to that answer. Like, oh, forget this crap. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is I have multiple techniques. So I will, depending upon, you know, this is the benefit of so many years in the healing arts now. You know, I still love Hollywood, and sometimes I miss, you know, working on scripts and all of that. But, you know, it's beautiful because I'm now on my purpose. I feel like I'm here to serve people and help them through these places. And really, it is really hard to do this on your own, I find. And so when you have somebody where I can pull out, I can go, okay, well, you know what? We're going to try something that shifts your emotional code. We're going to do this. Okay, that was great and it dealt with this, But really what's going on with you right now needs what's called my peace process. So I need to work with you on that. And if you have like anger that's a trigger, you know, or you know that you have certain emotions, we can actually even, I can go down to the exact, identify and release the exact trapped emotion that's causing that issue in somebody's body for them if they can't get in touch with it on their own. Right? Yeah. And depending upon, and I have people come to me just for that. Like, I just want this, you know what I mean? Honestly, the best work is to stay with me for a period of time. So, because what we're doing is we're changing the neural pathways and retraining the brain on, you know, we've all seen the research about how many days it takes to really implement a change. I always thought it was 21 days. It's something like 60 something or 90 now. They've changed it, right?
We've become more inundated. We have to take more time.
Yeah. And let's look at how the world has changed. Look, we are constantly, I know that I can't keep up on the emails that I get. I don't know all the news. I can't keep up with all the things that I have on my desk that I've given myself to do as an entrepreneur. And so our input is constant, right? Constant texts and, you know, so when all this stuff is coming in from the outside, it makes it more challenging for people to take the time to tune in because they're so used to everything on, you know, literally we're trained from birth to get everything from the outside, everything. And so that's what's really different about the way that you approach or the way that I approach is, look, I'm gonna take you in. We're not gonna go out, you know, because eventually I'm gonna get you so powerful and strong that you're gonna be like, I got this, you know.
And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it, knowing what tools are going to work when and what ones to employ. Just like how you were saying, I'm going to use the peace tool here, this one there. And then, you know, having a guide, folks, this is where you learn the tools so that you can implement these tools based on whatever you become exposed to.
Right.
Now, are you seeing people in person in addition to working virtually?
I'm taking a few. I have a few. They're usually people that have already been clients or people that I know. But yes, I am. I do, you know, most of the stuff now, I'd say about 90% of what I'm doing is virtual with people because I can literally do, you know, the ultra high frequency energy healing across, it doesn't matter if you're in Europe, you know, or whatever. Where it gets a little frustrating for me is, for example, I have one client that I've been working with who was in an auto accident, and I know I need to get my hands on her. We've done a lot, and she's doing much, much better. But if I could just have that extra, you know, she's not in the state. We're not anywhere near each other. She's threatening to come fly in and do a series with me. But you know, sometimes that's a little bit frustrating for me because as much as I can do, and I can do a lot long distance, there are some things where I'll be like, oh, man, I really need to get my hands on you. You know, that would make all the difference in the world. So yeah, and when I do my work, it's very interesting because it's like I'm having a conversation with the tissue. I literally do have a conversation with the tissue. So my hands are listening and it's a very non-invasive touch and the tissue actually will dialogue. It will let you know where it's angry. It will let you know where people are holding on to stubbornness or whatever. All of that is accessible to me by the way that I work.
That's cool. Yeah, I think for a lot of folks, I mean, that's how I get to. Sometimes I'm like, okay, it's great. And I've been doing a lot of virtual lately, but yeah, I'm like, I really need to do needles on you, or I really want to do, you know, tuning forks or whatever it may be. And so I can totally resonate with that. And so folks, when you're working with someone and you hear them say that, I mean, it really is us kind of knowing that we just need to do a little bit more.
Yeah.
And That's huge. So Carla, folks can get a hold of you in a couple different ways, but in particular, we are wanting to get them to learn about some possibilities with you. And so kind of opening up a call, and that's bookwithcarla.com, right?
Yes. For them. Yeah. Just book with Carla, Carla with a C, Carla.com. That's the best way because there's some times available and we have a chance to have a conversation and you actually get to feel a little bit about a little teeny taste of how I work. So
perfect. Yeah. I think that's good for folks to kind of understand how the different practitioners, let's put it that way, work on the internal healing, if you will. And that's why I do have different folks on, because I want folks to see all the different aspects of how you can address what's going on and help you to heal yourself. Now, in terms of things, you had mentioned your book. Tell us a little bit about that so folks can still have access to that.
Oh, okay. Well, that one's for sale up on Amazon, and it's, I'm trying to think. It's a collaborative book. So there were, I think, a dozen of us that female entrepreneurs from all over the world. And we collaborated. So everybody did a chapter. I'm the first chapter, so you don't have to read the rest if you don't want to. You can buy the book and just read. But I recommend you do, because there's some really good knowledge in there from the women there. So it's called Modern Women in the Business World, Your Path to a Better Life. And it's really a great book, actually. I feel honored. And we went number one twice. So number one on Amazon and also in Germany as a bestseller. So that was pretty exciting.
Cool. That's cool. And your website, womenshealthrevolution.com, yeah. Huh? That's your main site.
Yeah. Womenshealthrevolution.com is the main site. It is in the process of migrating from one platform to another. So if you can't go there and take a look, there's a lot of client testimonials. There's a video with me on there talking a little bit. So we've done a lot to put that site together, but if there's any problems with it for whatever reason, again, you know, best thing is bookwithcarla.com, and we'll get you set up with a complimentary limitless possibility session, so you can actually see what your possibilities are, because you truly are limitless, whether you realize it or not.
I think for a lot of people, it's believing that, really, truly believing that, because I think we've been, sadly, as women in particular, we've been beat down in life quite a bit, and social pressures, things of that nature too. But I think we do a lot to ourselves, and knowing and believing that we have limitless potential is probably paramount that I've found to folks getting success and getting what they want in life.
Yeah. Well, and it's all it takes is, you know, it's interesting. There's a woman I'm working, one of my clients right now, who she's amazing. And I helped her with, she was having some problems at work, and she was down. And so we talked about it, and I led her through a process around her relationship with one of her, her bosses, actually. And you could see the light bulb go off, because, and then at the end of the session, she's like, oh my God, all the places that this thought has been controlling my life that she didn't need anymore, you know, this emotion and the emotion behind it. So she was really excited to go forward, you know, and and it's exciting for me, because if you can unravel one thought, just even one, right, and get the emotion behind it for real, like everything around it in your body, that probably affects at least another 10,000 thoughts that you're holding on to. So we don't even know what the implications are of each one that we clear. And so, what I saw on her was moving into that place of, wow, I've got the power. It's like really knowing it and owning it and having a very visceral experience for herself. And that gets me excited.
You know? Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, it's beautiful when you can see that, when that light bulb goes off. Now, that being said, you and I were talking about your necklace before we jump on the call here. And I would love for folks to hear what that necklace says on it, because I think that's a great way to sum up this whole interview.
Yeah, well, it says one woman can do anything. Many women can change everything.
It's beautiful, because ladies, if you're listening to this and you're wondering about your limitless potential, and you know, you're feeling like, okay, obviously if you're listening to this, you're like, I need something, I need to do something. And the fact that you have it all inside of you, and ladies can be stronger working together and lifting each other up. That's what I'm all about. So I just love that necklace, and I need to find one.
Well, I got it in Big Sur.
Okay. Well, guys, California. I'll make it.
Okay. There you go.
California then to get that necklace. But no, thank you so much, Carla, for coming on, sharing all about your story, but also giving ladies a sense of what potential and possibilities they have to open up for getting the life of their dreams.
Thank you for having me. It's been a privilege and I really enjoyed the experience. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Hey, Health Junkie, do you want to take the conversation to the next level based off of the Health Fix podcast? Well, you're in luck. Head over to the Facebook group for this podcast called Find Your Health Fix. There you'll find me answering questions, but also dropping in all kinds of tidbits and keeping the conversation going all about health. And you'll never know what you might learn and what might open up a door to a new you.